All right, I guess we'll get started. Welcome. This is EXL 201, which is it's a 200-level session. I have a lot of people have asked me so far how deep we're going technical. This is a 200-level session, so it's not really deep technical. 300, 400-level sessions are much more deep technical. This is really designed as more of an overview and a not very deep look into how FOPI can, because I keep wanting to call it FOPE, how FOPI will help you manage your spam and viruses in your messaging implementations. My name's Robert Gillies. I work for Microsoft. I'm a solution architect. By the way, if anybody in here works for Microsoft or knows Navin, has phone numbers or anything for him, text him, email him, whatever, tell him he just walked off with my phone. I took it out of my pocket, laid it here. He was standing here, picked it up, and walked out with it. So if you know him, text him, tell him bring back my phone. We had the same phone, the blue Lumia 900, and mine was laying here. He picked it up thinking it was his. My phone's off, so you can't call my phone. All right, so I work for Microsoft. I work in the public sector. I work for state and local education and U.S. federal government customers here in the United States primarily. It looks like maybe next year my scope's going to expand to where I'll be working with all commercial customers in the United States as well. So it looks like I'm going to have a much larger customer base coming up in the next year. Let's see, something just popped up here I don't want. Today we're going to give a quick overview of FOPI. We're going to talk about a little bit of the setup and configuration, policies, routing, operations, and maybe ask some questions at the end. Hopefully you'll have some questions that I can answer. I like questions I can answer. If you have questions I can't answer, let's not go there. I don't need to be standing up here in front of people going, No, I'm kidding. Any questions? If I don't know the answers, I have no problem telling you I don't know the answers. And we can swap emails and I can find you answers, okay? So if you got answers, if you got questions, let me know. We'll start with an overview. So what is FOPI? FOPI is a system that sits kind of between the internet and your email system. And email flows through that in and or out, usually in and out, but if you choose not to, you don't have to flow outbound. And it will scan for viruses and spam in the inbound mail to clean up your mail, just keep that from getting into your users' mailboxes. So what we're going to go through here is, in the picture, we can see the internet on the right-hand side, or external email from your system. And your system's in the corporate network box on the left-hand side. Forefront Online Protection for Exchange is in the center box. Messages come in, we check for virus, we got the blocks on there, antivirus, anti-spam. We have policy-based things that you can put in there. You can manage policies, you can make policies yourself and say, for instance, I want to make sure that, and one of the things we'll show throughout as we talk about this, maybe I have a policy that says, if a message comes in and it has a executable attachment, I want to put it in quarantine, right? And so you can put that in quarantine in FOPI, and then your users can come get that out or not as they see fit. There's automatic spooling, so if your email systems are down, we can spool the messages and deliver them to your system later. You have an admin console that's web-based, and last but not least, it shows the quarantine down there where we can drop the messages in so your users can get to that. So you have the choice, we'll show later, you have the choice of using the junk mail folder in Outlook that we're all well acquainted with, or have kind of a web-based quarantine where we can drop the messages and your users can come get them out of FOPI. Where can we use FOPI? So obviously FOPI can be used in front of Office 365. If you're an Office 365 customer, FOPI is in front of your email systems. It's part of the deal. When you license Office 365, you're getting a license for the users that are in Office 365 for their mail to be filtered through FOPI. And as an administrator, you have the ability to get in and manage the policies and the filters that are used for the messages coming into Office 365 for those users. You can stand it in front, it says standalone. We can stand it in front of, for instance, an Exchange implementation you have on-premise. You don't have to be in Office 365. Or if you have, say, some Linux-based system or a Lotus Notes system or something along those lines, you can still put FOPI in front of that. Okay? There's no requirement for Exchange. We do feel like we have a better together scenario, and I work at Microsoft. I'd love to see you on Exchange. If you want to go there, let me know. I can help you out. Right? But there is no requirement for FOPI to be in front of Exchange or in front of Office 365. And we also have the hybrid scenarios where we're talking about having the on-prem where maybe your VIPs or your HR department has data that you don't want to be stored off-prem, right, in the cloud, and you need to store that on-prem. You need to have, for the data ownership reasons, you need to have that there. Maybe the security team and the HR team can be on-prem, everybody else is in the cloud. We can use FOPI in that scenario, in those hybrid scenarios, so that we're filtering all mail coming in and out of your system. One of the things we have, FOPI is one of the largest internet, commercial internet properties we have at Microsoft. Office 365 is catching up, but FOPI is still one of the largest. Even, and if you think about it, since all Office 365 customers are also FOPI customers, Office 365 may never really catch it. It depends on how you count licenses and things like that, and if it's dollars or if it's licenses or whatever. FOPI is pretty big. When you have a commercial property like this, you have something called SLA, service level agreements. And what that is a contract between Microsoft and you saying, these are the things that we will provide in our service and what level we'll provide those at. For instance, if you look across the top, we say, we will stop 100% of known viruses. Right, we have multiple levels of virus scanning. We have multiple scan engines, and we keep the engines up to date. And as long as the engines are up to date for these known viruses, we can stop 100% of known viruses getting through. Doesn't mean we stop 100% of viruses. It's known viruses. There's always going to be zero-day penetrations and things like that. But for those known viruses, we're going to stop them and not get them into your systems. Greater than 98% spam detection. Now, I was talking to a guy just a minute ago down here in front, and we claim that with our SLAs, we're going to stop 98% of spam. You can run reports and show it. I'll show you later how you run these reports. And we're showing in our spam detection that we're stopping about 99.95% of spam. So we're beating our SLA there. We also claim false positives. False positive means I stopped a message that wasn't spam. Right? And we claim 1 to 250,000 false positive ratio. So of 250,000 messages coming into the system, only one of those will be a false positive. Right? Of 250,000 spam messages coming into the system, only one of those will be a false positive. So that's our SLA. And that's an SLA for Exchange Online and FOPI. The bottom line is FOPI only, where we claim five nines uptime. And in the last 12 months, we have not missed our five nines uptime, right? And the email delivery averages less than a minute through the FOPI systems. It's very well distributed. FOPI is worldwide. We've got lots of data centers, lots of servers. And because of that, we can maintain these SLAs. Now, once again, these are contracts we have with our customers, and they're financially backed guarantees of service. So if we don't meet these SLAs, we have to pay you, right? So when you come to us and get a contract for FOPI, if we're not meeting the SLAs, we have to pay you. We've got a contract that says we have to pay you, right? So this is why I was telling the guy that was telling me I'm seeing lots of spam, but we need to figure out why, because their SLAs say you shouldn't, right? And you can run reports to see whether you're getting spam or not, and you can see why maybe spam's not being stopped, and we can get that cleaned up. So how do we do this? It's a multi-layered anti-spam approach, a multi-layered approach. What we do is we try to do things that take a lot less processing power first, right? We try to do things that tell the spammers less about you first. So the first thing we do is when somebody makes a connection into your system, they're trying to send an email to you. First thing you do is they make a TCP connection on port 25. That's SMTP. We all know that, right? We're email administrators. That's basic, TCP 25 port connection. We have lists, and we use blacklists and things like that, where we know certain IP addresses we're not going to accept connections from, so we immediately drop those, right? First off, just immediately drop those. That way, nobody that's receiving emails or trying to send spam emails to us gets responses back. They don't get NDR saying, oh, that guy doesn't exist, or I'm just going to drop that message, or for whatever reason, right? So they get nothing that says, well, yeah, you tried to send rgillies at Microsoft.com, and it delivered, but you tried to send to sgillies at Microsoft.com, and it didn't deliver. That means rgillies is a good email address. I can put that in a list, and I can sell it, right? We stop that for these people where we know these IP addresses are bad, okay? The next thing we do as we check out, oh, by the way, that blocks somewhere around 80% of all spam. Used to be around 95%, but we've done a lot of work on the internet, and you've seen it in the news, where we're attacking these botnets and blocking spammers and doing legal things where we can stop this stuff, and that's been reduced down from about 95% of all connections inbound being stopped down to about 80%. So we're making progress in stopping spam. The second thing we do is what we call sender and recipient filtering. So the sender recipient filtering is where, say for instance, and this isn't the only way it can happen, you do have an Active Directory on-prem. You can sync your Active Directory into FOPI, and then when messages come in, FOPI can look and say, oh, rgillies at Microsoft.com, yeah, that guy exists, so I'll let that message come in. Sgillies at Microsoft.com, then I'm going to drop that message, right? So first off, what this does is it makes sure that all messages coming inbound are to real people. We used to have a problem at Microsoft. One of our old Windows Mail clients went out, and it had someone at Microsoft.com as a default email message or email address in the configuration as a reply address. And people would just go, okay, click, 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 next, next, next. And then when they start sending messages, when you reply to them, you're replying to someone at Microsoft.com. We used to get millions of messages a day into Microsoft from sent to someone at Microsoft.com, literally someone at Microsoft.com, right? This kind of sender, this recipient filtering, where we have a list of who's receiving messages, who we can receive messages to, would stop that kind of thing, right? And as soon as you say in your SMTP stream as a sender, receipt to, RCPT to, right? And it says someone at Microsoft.com, since that's not in the list, we drop the connection. We don't give them back a NDR. So levels 1 and 2, we're not sending back NDRs, right? So nobody can harvest those and say, oh, someone at Microsoft.com doesn't exist, so I can take that out of my list. I can't sell that in the list. It's not a known good email address. Whereas rgillies at Microsoft.com worked, I could use that, right? So 1 and 2 does a lot of work to stop people from being able to harvest your email address. And we do the tar pitting and things like that to make this kind of thing realistic, right? Because if we don't do tar pitting, which is where when you try to send to someone who doesn't exist, I'm going to put a 5-second pause on you, right? And so you can't run a dictionary hash against the email addresses, right? So when you sync your data up to us, we're not going to let people go ahead and figure out what all the good email addresses you have are, right? Dictionary attacks against that if we didn't do tar pitting and make it really expensive. Just 5 seconds, 5 seconds. If you ask for a wrong email address, 5 seconds pause, realistically in the scope of things for a valid email is not much, right? But if you're running a dictionary hash against somebody, attack against somebody's domain, that could be a world of hurt. It can take years to go through a dictionary attack instead of 30 seconds, right? So we do this to make sure that people can't steal your email addresses. Then we get down to content filtering. Now, content filtering is that last 5% of spam messages we catch, but it's where we do a lot of processing against the message and see what's in the body of the message. See if the body of the message contains words like Viagra or, you know, other possibly not politically correct terms that we don't want going into our email, right? We all see them. We go, oh, God, my kids see these messages, right? And we don't need those. We don't need them on our systems at work, and we don't need them at home. Anything that we can catch that has that stuff in it, That's that last 5%. But that's the processing intensive. The first two layers, we want to wipe out as many connections as possible so that we're not doing the expensive scans, text-based scans of these messages. We want as little of that as possible. But we do have to do that before the messages get in. So we really think that that's an important part of it, right? And we always keep our content filtering up to date. And some of the later pictures show you how current email messages getting into the system that are spam, that aren't being caught, can be fed back to the FOPI people and get those new ideas that the spammers are using, get them back into the filter so that we can stop that in future iterations. So this shows a much more in-depth picture, and it's a build slide. It's going to move messages through. So we're going to talk a little bit more in-depth about the things we just talked about. So it's very, very much what we talked about here. It's just showing it in a more step-by-step manner how we're going to do this, okay? So first off, the little gear that you see on the far side from me, on that one, on the near side over here, is really saying we've synced a directory into FOPI so that we can do certain kinds of filtering. So that's what that's showing. So when a message goes in, before the message even gets delivered into the system, first thing we do was the first layer here, the first layer is connection filtering. So before the message comes in, we look to see if the IP addresses are IP addresses that we know we don't want, right? There are certain well-known IP addresses of well-known spammers, and we just say, no, we're going to block those, right? We've all worked, how many of you worked with real-time block lists, RBLs? Most of you? Okay. So we know what those are, and we use those, and that's what we use to block these, right? And we have our own list as well as commercial lists that we'll make use of as well. Once we determine that the IP address is okay, the message is allowed into the system. Okay, once that message comes into the system, we're going to do things like compare it to the directory, if you choose to do this. You don't have to do this, but if you choose to do this, you've synced your directory up. We're going to compare it, make sure that the addresses that we're sending to are okay, make sure that the sender is not on some sort of sender block list, right? So if, for instance, as a corporation, I can build a block list that says, I don't want to receive anything from, let's say I don't like Gmail, and I'm going to block everything from Gmail. I could put an @gmail.com, block that as a sender list. Anything coming from a Gmail address could be blocked. Not realistic, but, I mean, that's an email address we all know. We could all block that, right? You could do that. That's not really, like I said, that's not something that's realistic. It's just an example, but you block that. So if it's a sender that you don't want to let in by domain, or if it's a recipient that's not in your list, we can block it here. The next step, if it is a spam, we just throw it away at this point, right? The message is never really accepted into the system. That's what that's showing. The next step is your virus scanning. And this shows three blocks for virus scanning. Like I said, we run multiple scan engines against the virus scan, the message to make sure that we catch it. We keep these multiple scan engines up to date. The multiple scan engines, the reason we use multiple scan engines is that if we have three vendors, let's say it's three. We don't really talk about who they are or how many we really run. But let's say it's three because we have three drawn on the board. If they have three different signature files, we can watch and we can catch a signature file maybe earlier for this vendor than that vendor, right? Or maybe the next virus that comes out on the internet that somebody writes, the second vendor is the one that catches the signature first and gets the signature file updated. So we have multiple signature files that we keep updated all the time from these multiple vendors to try to catch these messages as soon as possible through your system. Okay, if it's a virus, if it's a known virus, once again, it goes right down in the trash can, right? We're not going to send you a known virus into your system, right? And the message goes on to the policy enforcement. This is where you might say something like, I'm a medical organization and I have HIPAA compliance rules that I have to deal with. And we've got a kind of a basic HIPAA rule set that's built, and we can put the HIPAA rule set against this, and then we can stop messages coming in based on things like personally identifiable information or something like that. We can filter based on that kind of stuff, right? Or maybe it's what we said earlier. The one that's going to be shown here is it's going to show, says the little email message says no VBS. So anything that's executable, what I'm going to do, if it's executable, if I have an executable attachment, I'm going to drop it into the quarantine, right? So that's my next step, is as I run policy against it and I see if I can stop the message based on what are the attachments or what words are in the document or things like that, right? So this is something you as the administrator make a decision, the policies, right? The policies that get applied. After that, if that passes that, if the message goes on, then we do the spam protection. We dig a little deeper, we do the filtering, we do some things like that at this point. And this is where our filters kick in. This is where we get to that processing intensive part of it, the last 5% of spam filtering, right? If there's spam, it can go to the spam quarantine. Otherwise, it's a good message. We've determined that we're going to deliver it into your system, right? First thing we try to do is we try to make that SMTP connection to your email servers. If your email servers are down, we can queue the message for up to 5 days waiting on your email servers to come back up, okay? Up to 5 days, they'll queue. If you're up, we deliver them. If you're not, we queue them. And once your servers, if we queue it, once your servers come up, then we have a throttled process where we'll start dumping email into your systems, right? So if you have an outage for some reason, we'll queue outside your system. It's queued on our systems. And then within those 5 days, when you come back up, messages then start delivering into your system, right? How many of you have scheduled power outages in your data centers every once in a while? We have to take a whole data center down, right? And you always worry, where's my stuff going to queue, right? So what we do here is we provide that service for you up to 5 days. We'll let the queues sit there, and then we'll deliver them into your system. Yeah. Okay, so the question is that if you contract with us for FOPI service, do we provide you with IP addresses that we'll be sending to you from so that you can set your firewalls up to block? And that's part of the configuration that is expected. That is what we will do, okay? We will tell you this is where you will be receiving email messages from. You should block all other inbound SMTP traffic, right? And I actually talk about that a little bit later, right? Thanks for the question. Okay, so once the message comes into your system, you have the ability to allow your users to make a judgment over whether these are false positives or if messages are in the quarantine or junk mail and they're false negatives. What if we marked it as spam and they don't want it to be a spam? So these things, false positives or false negatives, are things that we want you to give us feedback on. So you have the ability to do this. We have something called SEWR, and I always forget what it stands for. It's the Spam Early Warning Response. Spam Early Warning Response Team. I always have to think of that. So the SEWR is a team that they look at things, the feedback you give us as customers, and they look at the spam we get, and they're continuously updating the filters and things like that we use to stop messages. And you see here that we've got Elvis, and we've got, looks like Harry Potter, and maybe the one on the upper left-hand side, the Queen with the star, maybe that's Elton John on our SEWR team, and we've got Sherlock Holmes as well. So we're pretty smart in our SEWR team who we've got there. I love these little icons. I have no idea who picked those icons for this slide. But of course, nobody at Microsoft writes their own slides. We steal other people's slides, so no idea who wrote this one. But so the SEWR, they look at the stuff you feed back to them, and they feed it back into the filters and all the way back out to the IP reputation. So if we start getting a lot of messages sent in that happen to have a specific IP address, that might end up on our blacklist, our block list, okay? So that's the kind of thing that gets pushed way back out and can stop a lot of messages coming into a lot of users. So we really encourage you to give us that feedback if you're getting a lot of spam or if you're getting a lot of things that maybe you want to come in, right, that are being blocked. You can tell us that, and we can feed that information back all the way out to the edge. So we'll talk about, so the question is, how do they do that? How do you give the feedback? Is that the question? Okay, so we'll talk a little bit more about that in the future. There's an email address that you can send to that's in the, it's in later in the slide deck, or there's an Outlook plugin module that allows you to feed that back. So that feedback goes back to a shared email address that the spam early response team will evaluate and see what we can do to make our spam filters better in the long run. Okay? Excuse me, if I feedback to someone, you so we've got a contract with you of the SLA, and if we're not meeting the SLA, there's a dollar figure we have to give you money back. right? And I'm not familiar with the contract as in the letter of the law and all that kind of stuff, but we have tech support, you have numbers to call, we will work with you on this. This is a service we're providing and we sell it, and you have a choice of not buying it if we don't provide the service, and we have a legal contract to give you money back if we're not meeting the SLA. Does that answer your question? Okay. So, I mean, realistically, there's nothing else I can say about it. Yes, we should be working with you on this. The SLA says we should be doing certain kinds of filtering, right? We talked about the SLA earlier. If we're not meeting the SLA, there are financial penalties involved. And the SLA, the contract that you sign with us defines those SLAs. All right, so outbound filtering. So one of the things that we've always talked about is that when you send messages to other organizations, you don't want viruses going out. That's just rude, right? Maybe someone comes in, they plug in a USB stick they had at home. Oh, look at these pictures my kid took over the weekend that they dropped on a USB stick. Well, the kid also drops a virus on there, right? You don't have control of that. Your user picks up a virus and they send an outbound virus. These things happen, okay? What we want to do is we want to scan that message outbound, make sure that you're not sending that virus on to the next company, because that's just kind of considered rude. Okay? We also want to make sure that any messages you're sending outbound, that you're not being a bad internet citizen and sending out what would be considered a spammy message, right? You don't want to be sending out tens of thousands of messages and get yourself ended up on some real-time block list somewhere, right? So we watch those kind of things. So the first thing that happens, a lot of the connection filtering and things like that, because you're a partner of ours, we're not going to do connection filtering against you. You're going to connect to us, we're going to accept the connection. Right? So that's why this picture is a good bit different. First thing we do is we virus scan it. The message comes from you to FOPI. We virus scan it. If it's got a bug or a virus, we drop it into the trash can. If it doesn't, it moves on. Policy enforcement, if you choose to have a policy that does something to the message, you can do that. You can add something to the headers. You can add something to the subject line, something along those lines. Right, you have the ability to do that. Kind of similar to what we can do in transport rules in Exchange, right? And we've got a slide later that talks about, well, why would I want to do it here versus why I want to do it in transport rules? There's some different scenarios that are better or worse, but you have the ability to have policy take action on outbound. So policy happens here. Then we look at spam protection. Are your messages clean? Or are you sending spammy messages, right? Because the other side of this coin is that if Joe down here in front is sending out spam, we don't want him to affect your ability as another company to be able to send spam out. So what happens is if the message is clean and it's got a low spam score, we're going to send it out through the normal outbound pool. Okay? The message goes out to the internet at this point, gets delivered to your customers, your partners, whoever you're working with, your mom, your dad. Let's play golf this Friday, right? The message goes out. What if it is spam, though? If it is, or it has a high spam score, it goes into what we call our high-risk pool, okay? The high-risk pool is where we send these messages with high spam risk so that our low-risk pool, which goes outbound from a different set of IP addresses, doesn't get put into anybody's real-time block lists. So what we're doing here is we're trying to make an effort not to end up on the block lists. Can we guarantee we'll never end up on block lists? No, we can't guarantee that. All someone has to do on the internet is fat finger it into some big block list, and all of a sudden we're on a block list. Or if some message goes out and someone has a new spam filter on their system, and they look at it and they go, that's spam. All of a sudden we end up on a block list, right? It happens. But we work with our partners to make ourselves to make sure we have the ability to get off these block lists as quickly as possible. So we want to reduce the chance that we're going to end up on a block list and your messages won't get delivered, right? Everybody has the same risk if you're sending messages on the internet. Everybody runs the same risk. We send a lot of messages, someone could end us up on a block list. What we're doing here is trying to make sure we have as low a chance as possible to end up on those block lists to give you as high a chance as possible of getting your legitimate email out to the internet. All right, let's talk a little bit about setup and configuration. How many of you looked at FOPI, have tried it out, have run it a little bit? I know you down here in front, you were talking to me earlier. We've got a scattering. So if you've got some email alias that you use, some domain you're using that's a test domain, it's very easy for you to go out to this website that's on this slide, fill out a little form, and say, hey, I want to try this out. And you can get a 30-day free trial so that you can get email routed through Foppy and you can see how it works. Okay? Very easy to try it out. Highly encourage it if you're considering using Foppy to go out there, set you up a test domain. How many of you have the knowledge where you could set up a nice little Exchange server at work and you could send an email, set your MX records on the internet and you can get email sent into this test domain? I bet you all of you do. I bet you can all figure out how to do that. This gives you ability to do that on any domain you want to set up and set this up and make use of it. Right? Give it a try. So how do we do it? First things first. There's a set of required things you need to do and a set of not required but, shall we say, recommended things you should do. Right? First thing you do is you log on to the Foppy admin console. Yep, that's required. That kind of makes sense, right? These blue links on the left-hand side are links. Get the slide deck. Go out there. Read the documentation. Right? These are links to the documentation that tells you how to do these. You want to validate and enable your domains. Notice that there's an S on there. Not only do you have the ability to have one domain, you could have, with your license, multiple domains. So Contoso.com and Fabricam.com are actually one company. We bought Contoso buys Fabricam. They're all one company, one email system, but we need to keep both of those domain names because they're well known. Lots of organizations have this kind of scenario. They have multiple domains they want to use, right? We can certainly support that. So this gives you the ability to do that. If you're an Office 365 user, the link on the left-hand side is not what you want to use. The link on the right-hand side tells you where to go to Office 365 documentation to see how to do this. Right? After you've set up those domains, you can add other domains. And here's the documentation how to do that. Then you set up your inbound email filtering. Yes, you must update your MX records. Yes, you must restrict your incoming traffic to Foppy. Right? That's a requirement. Don't let SMTP traffic come in from somewhere else or we can't meet our SLAs. If you're accepting SMTP email traffic from somewhere else and they're not being gone through our filters, we can't guarantee you that we can stop spam. Okay? So we require that. The one question earlier was, do we do that? And yes, we do. Set up email deferral notifications. So this is if there's some reason why messages are being deferred for delivery, we want to be able to send messages to somebody else. So maybe you have an admin account that's got a Hotmail account, you know, maybe it's contosoadmin@hotmail.com that we'll send a message to that you can check. It's outside your system. It gives you a way to see that there's something being deferred coming into our system, and here's a notice why, right? That one's the first one on the list that's not actually required, right? But we do highly recommend it. Then you set up your outbound email filtering if you want it, and then we verify the Foppy setup, which is optional. Right? You don't have to verify it, but we do recommend that. Okay? Once again, all the documentation is in the links here. Highly recommend it if you want to give it a try. This gives you all the material you need to set it up and give it a whirl. Some other best practices, directory synchronization. Somehow, we want to be able to stop people from trying to just harvest all your email addresses, and directory synchronization allows us to do that. It allows us to stop backscatter NDRs. Right? It allows us to stop those things from happening. So, directory synchronization is a good thing, right? If you have an Active Directory, there's some well-known ways to synchronize the Active Directory in. If not, you could do an FTP of a CSV dump or something like that we can import that and use that as well. So there's other options if you're not an Active Directory shop, but this gives you the ability to get these directory in there. We highly recommend that. Setting your SPF so that your domain SPF record says that Foppy is receiving and sending is sending emails for me so that our servers sending your email don't end you up as a spammy environment just because you didn't put the right SPF filter out there, okay? Network connections, we want you to say, well, we're going to limit 50 connections and 50 messages per connection, so we'll have you set those up on your Exchange. That better throttles for messages coming in and out of Foppy from your system. And security, setting up who from your system has the ability to connect. What IP addresses do you want people to be able to connect to the admin console? For instance, you can lock that down. Making sure that people that are logging into Foppy have passwords that are complex passwords, right? Let's make sure that nobody can crack into, especially our admin accounts, and start changing our FOPI settings that we don't want them changing, right? So you can have those kind of security settings. Routing with virtual domain. So a virtual domain is like, for instance, if you've got an international organization, so you've got North America and you've got European systems, you can set up virtual domains. Like, for instance, you can have northamerica.fabricam.com, and you could say europe.fabricam.com. And these are virtual domains. They're not real email domains, but what they are is kind of groups. We'll group users, and we'll say, well, if the message is coming in to Robert, he's North America, we want to make sure that message gets delivered into the North America data centers. So like I said earlier, we have FOPI data centers worldwide. Messages get into our network, and then what this allows you to do is control when they come into your network and where they come into your network, right? So you can make North American messages come into the North America data centers on your network, and European messages come into European data centers. Now, there are some things with these virtual domains that will limit some of the other things you can do, some of the other policies you can do, and things like that. Did you have a question? I'm sorry. Okay, so the question is about backscatter NDR. So you can go. I highly recommend, if you don't know what backscatter is, go look it up on the internet. What it basically boils down to is that if I send a bunch of messages in to a bunch of email addresses that I don't have any idea if they exist, it's kind of a dictionary type attack where I'm just sending, it's cheap just to send SMTP emails out, right? And I just see if I get NDRs for these users, right? So if you send this attack at Microsoft, and an rgillies@microsoft.com message doesn't send a NDR, whereas, say, sgillies, which is like the next alphabetical email address that might go through, does send an NDR, it's very easy for you to say, oh, rgillies is right, sgillies is not. So it gives you a cheap way to figure out, that's what backscatter is used for, right? Sgillies, I can throw that one out. Rgillies, oh, that's a jewel, I can keep that one and use that one to send spam to. So that's what backscatter NDRs are, right? It's a cheap way, just send a bunch of messages in, see which ones send NDRs, and ignore all the ones that send NDRs. Well, that's, okay, so that's where someone will send a message to me that in a system where I don't exist, and then all of a sudden I get the NDRs. So you get those as well. And that's, yeah, what you do with that, and that's one of the filters, and that's also related to backscatter, right? That's one of the filters where NDRs coming into our system, we make sure that we don't accept too many of those, the wrong kind. If you send an NDR to my system, if your system sends an NDR to my system saying, this is an NDR that was sent from one of your users to one of your users, why would an NDR from that was sent to someone called rgillies@microsoft.com be being sent into microsoft.com? Because rgillies@microsoft.com doesn't exist on the internet. He exists at Microsoft. So my domain looks at that and says, NDRs that are to my users, so from another system saying, I'm not accepting a message to your user, right? I block those. Does that make sense? Right? So, So the question says listservs that are external, and those are also, we know how to handle those, right? Right. So they're a little different. That's a little different where, right? So if a message is sent to a system, and someone generates an NDR and sends it into the system. So if someone says down here, my users receive maybe 300 NDRs all of a sudden, right? We can stop that, because if the NDR was supposed to be sent, is a non-delivery port for a message that was sent to rgillies@microsoft.com, and that NDR is coming into me from the internet. If a message is supposed to be sent to rgillies@microsoft.com, then microsoft.com email servers should be generating the NDR if it can't deliver. So let's say my mailbox is full, you decide to send me an email, Exchange is going to go, yeah, his mailbox is full, I can't deliver, here's an NDR. Okay? If an NDR is sent back into Microsoft that says, this is an NDR because it was sent to RaulGillies@Microsoft.com, and I couldn't deliver it, you block that, right? No other system anywhere else should be generating an NDR for RaulGillies@Microsoft.com other than a Microsoft.com owning email system, right? And so we can stop those, all right? And here's where we say allow users to report false positives. At the easiest, all you send is falsepositive@messaging.microsoft.com, right? And we also, I'll show later, we've got an Outlook plugin that you can use as well. But if you send these messages, and what they'll do is you write a message, a false positive@microsoft.com, you drag the message that's a false positive into this, to that message as an attachment. Then we get all the headers, and we can look at it, and we can figure out why is it a false positive? Does it, should it, is it being caught by what part of our scanners? Was it a filter that caught it? What is it, a policy that caught it? Is it some? Why did it get marked as spam? And we can figure out why, and we can help you figure out how to get it to where it's not being marked as a false positive in the future, so that your users can get that message. Do we just need a safe sender, or what? Right. So that's how we do that. That's one way you can do it. You don't have to have Outlook to do that. That's just any old email application that you can send that in. Okay, but like I said, we've got a much easier solution for the users where it's just click and send. So I've got a little demo. So what I'm going to do, let's see if it logged me out. No, yes it did. So I've got to figure out what my username is. I'll get logged in here real quick and all right, so what this is this is your FOPI admin console. And I'm going to run through a few things here. If you see on the left-hand side, so you can see that on the left-hand side, this is a company report. So in the last 30 days, this company has sent basically zero messages had come in. So this is a demo account that I use. This is actually an account I got set up by some buddies in the UK. So it's some TSs, some of the technical pre-sales guys in the UK have this domain. And we haven't been sending email in and out of that. But on the right-hand side, you see some quick network reports that shows spam filters and inbound delivery and policies and things like that for the entire FOPI system, right? And we see that the delivery count is somewhere spiking up between 210 and 220 million messages a day some days. So that's how many messages are being delivered inbound. And if you scroll down on this, you can see that we also have spam count. We spiked a couple of 3 weeks ago, somewhere almost close to 850 million spam messages in a day, right? Policy count is how many policy catches, how many messages have we had our customers have policies that caught messages and didn't allow them to be delivered. And the bottom is virus. Virus counts are in K instead of millions or in thousands. So somewhere around 190,000 viruses were caught a few weeks back, somewhere around 529, 530, somewhere in that time zone, right? There's also on this same page, if you scroll back up towards the top, it's kind of a announcements and network alerts and virus alerts. Are there any new viruses? We'll have kind of news services here to tell you about this stuff, right? Here's an admin tab that you can go into. This is where you can change information about your company. You can set up who are your main contacts, set up the language, what's your time zone. You can change these kind of preferences, right? You can set up mail delivery settings. You can go into your domains and you can say, hey, this is how specific domains are set up. So if we go into this domain, we can look and we can say, what mail server addresses are we receiving mail on, right? What is our IP addresses for our SMTP servers that FOPI is sending mail to? And what IP addresses are we sending mail to as we send outbound? So what are the FOPI IP addresses? Right, so this outbound mail server IP address, this is where we can say, and we'll talk about this a little later in the routing, where we can say, FOPI, I want you to actually send mail to a specific IP address, not necessarily send it on out to the internet. Question?
Do you recommend sending from FOPI to a
Okay, so the question is, in an exchange environment, do we recommend you send messages from FOPI to a hub in your system or to an edge in your system? And that's kind of up to you. We'll work with you to see how you want to do it. I don't believe there's really a huge reason to go to edge, but a lot of customers just absolutely don't want to have SMTP messages come in from the outside world into their corporate internet, and we don't allow firewalls between hub and domain controllers, for instance. So depends on your security stance and what your requirements are. So either one is valid, right? But it depends on your security stance and how we want to set that up. Okay, so either one is valid. Either one will work. All right, so you could change a lot of settings here about your domain. You got in here the list of users. This will take a second to come up. Very small list of users. You see me down here at the bottom. These can be, as I said, they can be synced up from the on-prem, or you can create them here. There's other ways that can be brought in here. Policy rules can be set here. For instance, I believe this rule here, the third rule down, is a rule that says, it's a policy that says, if a message comes in and it has a executable attachment, I want it to be put into the quorum. The quota. So as we scroll down, I've missed where it's set up. So it says check mark executable attachment, and I say what action do I want to take? Domain scope is all domains. Traffic scope is inbound messages. Action is put it into the quarantine, right down that left-hand side. Right. So it's very easy to build these kind of policies, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. But you can actually filter on with these policies to figure out messages using some regex as well. And we don't have any filters built, so I'm not going to go there. And you go here to see your reports as well. So for instance, if I want to create a new report, I'm going to create a real quick, real easy report. You tell what kind of traffic types do I want to have. I've got four different kinds of reports I can do here: email, top viruses, deferral report, and top users, so I can see which users are sending the most email. We can pick what type of email we want to have, and then we can click on View Report, and it'll just quickly bring up a report for us. Reports are very, very graphical based, very easy for you to see charts, to see how many messages are being sent, see how many viruses are being stopped, see how much spam is being stopped, and things like that. Very powerful. You can set these up, I think somewhere else we talk about a little bit, you can set these up to be sent an email to you on a periodic basis. So it's a very powerful admin console, very powerful way to see how to do these things. So let's see if I can get PowerPoint back up and running. Of course. Okay, so I've got a couple slides here. I'm going to click through these real quick. Here's a picture of the user list that had a lot more users in it and a little more interesting. You can click and disable users. Come on. And this was another showing how to set up a policy. Reporting, you have like I said, you got four available reports. You report on some or all of your domains. You can have these scheduled to deliver one time, weekly, or monthly, right? So you have the ability to have these reports sent to you or sent to your CIO or whoever you need to be able to report to show that that FOPI is doing its job, right? These reports should help you figure out if we're meeting our SLAs and things like that as well. And this just shows a quick screenshot of creating reports. And this is interesting in that it is a how to track your audit trails as well. So I didn't go into the tools. I could have shown you the tools. You can do message tracing here. And obviously, this message tracing is going to show you messages that go through FOPI itself as opposed to messages that are in your Exchange implementation. And the audit trail shows who's connected to our system and what have they done, right? So you can audit your administrators making changes to your FOPI configuration. It's all built into that same web console, right? Very good question, sir, on this slide. That's just $10. Thanks for the leading question there. Message tracks is kept for 30 days. Deferral, virus details, things like that. The data is kept for 90 days. User traffic for 14 days. So if you want to see who's your biggest user or something like that, that information is kept for 14 days. 15 days of data is in the quarantine. And once again, as we said earlier, SMTPQs are held for 5 days if your servers are down. Yes, ma'am. Okay, the question is there a message log that you can redeliver messages? If the messages don't get delivered, if they're actually trashed, no, right? If they go into quarantine, you can get the messages out of quarantine.
But even ones that have been delivered, you don't have a way?
We don't have, no. If messages have been delivered, we don't have a way to resend those messages. You would send those back out of your client if they needed to be resent. All right, how do we manage junk mail? So this kind of talks a little bit. The table's a little not exactly what I would have drawn in a table, and I didn't have time to really change it. But it's kind of saying Office 365 is kind of the middle column where it says Outlook OWA junk mail. And you have the choice of for your on-prem solution, whether you want to use the Outlook OWA junk mail column, or do you want to use the VOPI spam quarantine. Right? So you have the choice of which way you want to do that, right? In Office 365, you don't have the choice. You're going to use in the middle column, right? And what it says is, where does suspect mail go? Well, if you choose the middle column, you choose to have it delivered, it goes into the junk mail folder. If you choose to have it quarantined, it goes into the FOPI quarantine, right? The difference here is, as a user, personally, I like having it end up in, I don't want to have to go to a separate system to get my junk mail. I want it in my junk mail folder, right? That's me personally. That doesn't necessarily mean that meets your corporate requirements. So we give you the ability to have this quarantine that forces users to go into the quarantine and get messages if they need those messages, right? Personal block list, we've got a slide on the next slide that shows us a little bit more about that. And personal safe senders, you configure those two in Outlook, and they get pushed out to the border, and FOPI, it gets synchronized to FOPI, and FOPI uses that. And this is part of the AD or the AD-based synchronization of the directory. So not only do we sync when we synchronize the directory, not only do we synchronize your users, we also synchronize these personal safe senders, personal block sender lists. Okay. So you know in Outlook you can right click, and we'll show it here. In Outlook, I don't know if my little clicker is working or not. So in Outlook, you can right-click on a message and go down to the Junk tab, so it shows it in this in the right-click menu. You go down where Junk, and you can say Block Sender, Never Block Sender. Those are your personal block lists and your personal safe sender lists, right? And so that information, just like if you're running Edge and you do an Edge sync, this information also gets synchronized out to FOPI, and FOPI can make use of this information as well. Right? There's also, it shows on the right-hand side, the little check marks. It says you'll need to download the slide, and so you can zoom your face in on it real big and see where it says disable links and things like that. So you have a lot of control in Outlook over how spammy messages get presented and not. This is what the quarantine will look like. It's a web-based console. It looks a little bit like an older version of OWA. You can go out there and you can easily download these messages and have them delivered, that kind of thing. Then there's this junk email reporting tool. This is one of the things I mentioned, that you could email to messages to like the abuse@messaging.microsoft.com. You can just directly send those. This also gives you a way that you can take a message, right-click, say, this is a false negative or a false positive or whatever. I want to send it off to the abuse people and let them, so it goes to an alias that's monitored by the FOPI spam people, and those guys will, look, the little icons we had earlier, they'll look at it and they'll see what they need to make changes to possibly fix the spam filters that are making those decisions. So connectors and policies. So let's talk a little bit about that. So this shows a kind of a more linear, remember the funnel we had earlier? The three layers in that funnel were the connection, security, and filtering. And this shows you that source IP, source domain, all these little yellow boxes below there, you have the ability as the administrator to choose which of these little boxes do and do not get applied. So if you don't like the way we're doing spam filtering, or you really don't think we're doing enough, you have the ability to turn these off and on. And you were telling me earlier that you're getting a lot of spam. I somehow believe something's turned off in your system if you're getting a lot of spam, because we've got this SLA that says we're stopping spam if you're getting a lot. And like I said, my stuff sits behind, and I've got email addresses that I use everywhere. I don't have one of these. I don't have like a spam at hotmail.com email address that a lot of people will set up. I have just use my normal email, because I like to see whether spam's coming in or not and see how good we're doing, right? I'm an email guy. I work at Microsoft. I kind of submit myself to cruel and unusual punishment on the internet sometimes. And I don't get a lot of spam, and all my stuff goes through FOPI. Right, I have an Office 365, my personal domain's O365, and Microsoft stuff sits behind this as well. So if all the filtering's on and you have the ability to choose how to apply these, you should be getting them stopped, right? So the one big thing on this that we need to be very clear about, I was told that a lot of people get confused about what's the difference in an inbound and outbound connector. An inbound connector is coming into your domain. So it's messages from the internet coming into your domain, right? An outbound connector is the connector that controls messages going out from your domain to the internet, okay? Policy enforcement. So when you build policy, so I showed you where you can pull down and you can tell what the action's going to take. This tells you a lot of the different things you can do there, right? The scope. Is it all your domains or just one of your domain? Is it inbound or outbound messages? So that allows you to choose those things. Right? How do we match? Is it on message size? Is it on number of recipients? Or is it a regular expression? You have the ability to have a regular expression in there to say, do we match? And this is the messages I want to apply these policies to. And what actions do we want to take? Do we want to reject the message, allow the message, send it to a junk mail folder, send it to the quarantine, those kind of things. You also have the ability to do a test, okay? Now what the test does is you have the ability to add in an X header or to change the subject line of the test messages, right? And the thing is, once you push a policy, it takes it about 30 or 45 minutes to replicate around all of our servers worldwide so that you get a good consistent understanding of what's happening, right? We can't let a policy apply until those policies are pushed to all the servers. So you got to give it 30, 45 minutes, and then the policy will just automatically start happening. Because we don't want some servers in Europe applying a policy because you pushed it out over there, but the servers in North America aren't applying the policy yet, or applying a different policy, right? So where you're testing or whatever, you got to remember that it takes a little while for this stuff to push out, but you build these policies, you push them out, and you can have a test to see, well, let's see what happens if, you know, I got my filter built right to catch these things. Right, and you can set an expiration. You can say, I want a filter that stops messages that have this information in them, but I only want it to happen for 2 weeks. So you can do those kind of things, right? So if you've got a policy rule, there's some basic syntax to use. This talks a little bit about regex and basic. Basic is like where you say APPL star matches APPL 1234 or Apple or application, and APPL question mark, that means a single character instead of any number of characters. Or you can do regex. And it's not a full everything in the world implementation of regex. It's our own implementation of regex. So somebody told me that it's not everything in the world with regex. I'm certainly not a regex expert, so I'm not going to be able to help you build your regex, but give some little examples here. Yes?
Does the policy let you go into the headers and set rules based on headers, SPF results, and so forth?
So here where it says match, it doesn't list headers. It's subject and body and message size, those kind of things. I don't know which headers you have access to, but some of the actions will insert headers. So you can do that and set the spamminess of a message, set the SCL, that kind of thing. Reported SPF results. The question is, can I have a policy that reports the SPF results? I do not know. Send me an email. Once again, rgillies, R-G-I-L-L-I-E-S @microsoft.com. I got business cards. Catch me afterwards, or I'm at the booth tomorrow for like at 12, I think, for 3 hours. Catch me, and we'll find out. Okay, I don't know that answer, but catch me, and we'll find out. Creating a rule, filters. Filters can be based on dictionaries, and a dictionary is like 9,000 characters or 2 meg or something like that, and you upload these dictionaries, and the dictionaries could be like dirty word filters, right? So I work for federal government customers, and they have secure environments, and if you send a message that has, I don't know, the word hippopotamus and the word helicopter in the same message, all of a sudden it becomes a classified message, right? So we call that a dirty word filter, right? Some other companies might use it actually for dirty words or something, but so you might be able to build dirty word filters or something like that with these kind of dictionaries so that you can catch messages that are going out. It kind of allows you to have a way that you can stop leakage using these filters, right? It says down at the bottom 2 meg or 9,000 characters, right? And it can contain IP addresses, keywords, mail addresses, that kind of thing in the dictionaries. Right, and the dictionaries are used as part of the way you can use dictionaries to build filters. Exchange hosted encryption is kind of interesting in that if any of you in here deal with personally identifiable information that you have to deal with customers, you have to send them email, and you've got to figure out how to encrypt that email going out, HIPAA information, things like that. Anybody? I see a couple of hands, maybe. It's really hard to see up here. I got the lights in my eyes, so if I miss you, I'm sorry. So this gives us a way that without swapping certificates around, we can send messages. We can force them to be encrypted based on policy or whatever to have this message be encrypted. So what you end up receiving as a user is a message that says, hey, you've received an encrypted message. Click here to go see it. And it goes back to a website that hosts that encrypted message, and you can get into that message and see what that message is. Everything's encrypted. It keeps us from sending encrypted messages to people that we shouldn't be sending encrypted messages to. It keeps us from letting people see the encrypted messages that shouldn't be able to see it. And the encryption is based on the identity of the recipient, right? Identity-based encryption. It's a very interesting concept, and this is something that you can, it's an add-on license, this exchange hosted encryption that you can get, and we can help you control that kind of thing as well. So this, remember I talked earlier where you kind of make a decision, do we use the exchange administrative tools to do these things to our messages, or do we want to use the FOPI admin console, right? So if you want to track messages within your organization, right, that haven't gone out to the internet, how did the messages go from Joe to Susie, or not go from Joe to Susie, and why? Where did they go, what service they go through, that's going to be done within the Exchange admin tools, right? If you want to see the message that went from Joe to some guy on the internet, you're going to go through the FOPI console to see how it got delivered, who it got delivered to on the internet, right? Because remember, your Exchange servers or whatever servers you have are no longer connecting to the internet. They're connecting to FOPI, FOPI scanning it, and then sending it on, and this will allow you to see that. If you want to block email sent to the outside world by a given sender or moderate email delivery, something like that, that's going to be done within Exchange. Configuring journaling of email, that's going to be done within Exchange as well, right? Because remember, not everything goes through FOPI, so if you've got a requirement to journal every email message in the system sent or received by your users, can't be done at the FOPI level. It must be done at the Exchange level. Okay. Whereas for FOPI, things like all messages going to the internet, we want to make sure and add a header or something to that message. We can do that here. Custom dictionaries, specific header attributes, things like that can be done to the messages going to and from the internet. Setting SPF, backscatter. Can we force TLS with your partner? So we do that at the spam level, at the FOPI level, okay? So let's talk a little bit about mail routing. So this shows, what we want to show here, and I'm going to go, I've got about 10 minutes left, 11 minutes left, so I'm going to kind of go a little quick here. What this is showing is that we have a lot of different ways we can configure FOPI. We can configure SMTP email to come into an on-prem system, which is what this is showing here, comes directly into an on-prem system, doesn't have a cloud-based system involved. This is specifically coming into your system. We're forcing TLS. We're saying when the messages leave FOPI and go to Woodgrove Bank, they have to go through a encrypted TLS encrypted SMTP session, right? So we can force that, right? If we want, and here's a setting where you would say force TLS, right? Sender recipients, sender certificate matches. So that means that when they send to us, and their server says, hi, I'm mail.woodgrovebank, that the certificate has to have mail.woodgrovebank.com on that certificate, or we're not going to allow that message to come in. So we have to have a trusted certificate in that case, right? Whereas always we'll try to use opportunistic TLS, which says, well, if I can get an encryption, I'll go ahead and use it. I don't care if the certificate's good or not. This is saying I'm going to force the certificate to be good, so I'm going to do certificate checking. So we can do that, so you have trusted partners. This is a situation for outbound smart hosting where you might say, I want the message to go through my Exchange servers on-prem, even though it's going out through Exchange Online or Office 365, right? So I want the messages to go to my on-prem and then something to happen to them. I want to do some sort of journaling, for instance. I want to journal to an on-prem journal. Any message sent or received, I want it to go through my on-prem journal. And in this case, the message goes from Exchange Outlook, O365, I'm sorry, Office 365, to FOPI, to the outbound connector from FOPI into your on-premise Exchange, and then on-premise Exchange sends it on outbound. That could be, for instance, any kind of email device that can catch those messages, take some sort of perform some sort of action on it, and then send it on. So you can have these smart hosts, and so you don't necessarily have to have all messages go out of FOPI to the internet, right? And this shows you how to do that. Inbound safe listing. So if I say that the message from Jane at fabricam.com, I want to say I don't want to do any filtering on that. So in this case, the message comes into FOPI and kind of sweeps around the filtering, so that the message doesn't go through filtering before it gets delivered, right? So this would be salesman@contoso.com, which is our internal domain, that's my domain, whereas Jane at Fabricam is someone that I'm doing business with, and I need to make sure that I always get those messages and I want them to be false positive. So when I push that in my own safe sender list, FOPI knows to not do that, right? And here we're gonna show a little bit more. Once again, during your migration to Office 365, you have to make the decision. Do you want mail to come into Office 365, or do you want mail to come into your on-prem and then let Exchange figure out how to do the routing? FOPI is not really going to do mail routing for you. You set up a connector, says when messages come in for my domain, they go back out to here, period. That's all the choice you get. An inbound message for domain X goes back out to domain X, this other connector, and that's how you set it up, right? So you say the message came in, it goes to this destination. Right, and so Exchange will make the decision that we're in a shared environment, we have a hybrid environment, whether it's during a migration or a long-term coexistence scenario, and we need to make that decision. Exchange makes that decision on-prem for you, or in the cloud, whichever one you want to set up. So this shows that if we have an inbound message, it goes on-prem makes the decision, it goes to on-prem says, oh, that user doesn't exist here, but I know how to deliver it, so I'm going to send it on through FOPI. Come on, I like build slides. It goes on through FOPI, it gets filtered at the FOPI layer, and goes into Exchange Online. Okay? Now for Office 365, the virus scanning actually happens for forefront protection for Exchange, so the virus scanning in FOPI is not used at that point. So for your Office 365 connectors, we do skip the virus scanning in FOPI. So what about outbound? Same thing. If the message originates in Office 365, goes to the FOPI connector, gets filtered, ends up in the on-prem. On-prem says, okay, that message doesn't belong here. It's going on outbound to the internet, right? So you have the ability to do that. This is not, once again, these are not exhaustive. It's not every choice you have of how you want to do routing. This just gives us a lot of different options here. What if we're mailing from Exchange in Office 365 to our on-prem, or vice versa? So the on-prem message gets generated. It goes. It says, "Oh, well, it is for my domain, but it needs to go to the cloud." We send it to FOPI. Since it's within our organization, we have set up a connector where FOPI knows not to process that message. The message goes around all our processing. How about that for a build? Whoop, around the processing, and then gets delivered into Office 365 to a mailbox, right? So you got, and this is another situation where It looks like really the message goes from on-prem to Exchange Online to Office 365 Direct, but it's not. It goes through FOPI. Every connection goes through FOPI. This is where we've said if you're going to send into Office 365, it has to go through FOPI. So it looks like it's going direct, but it really doesn't go direct. So another shared address space here. I'm going to kind of zoom through these. This goes into FOPI, goes into Exchange Online. So what we've said is Exchange Online is going to make our decisions. Office 365 is going to make the decision how to deliver. Goes into Exchange in the cloud. Exchange says, well, that is our domain, but it's not the one I want to deliver to. I'm going to send it right back out to FOPI. At this point, FOPI is not going to do any more processing on it because it did go through all the processing to get into Office 365 already, and it sends it on to the on-prem. Right? One thing to keep in mind here is that if you set that up this way that we just showed, all messages coming into your environment are going through FOPI. And so if you don't have the license for your on-prem users to use FOPI, that license for FOPI is included in your Office 365. If the users aren't already licensed for FOPI through Office 365, you have to buy FOPI licenses for your on-prem users for this kind of configuration. So anytime the message gets filtered through Office 365 or through FOPI, you have to have that license. Your Office 365 users automatically have it. If you set it up like this, the messages have to go through FOPI, and you need to have that license. So this is a situation where, let's see, outbound with the MX points to Office 365, it goes outbound to the internet, or if it goes from on-prem, you have the choice of just sending it direct to the internet. Or if you want to call in and get it set up, you can actually send outbound through the FOPI as well from your on-prem. So you have a lot of options, once again, for this routing to figure out how you want your message to flow. Does it go through FOPI? Does it not go through FOPI? And those kind of things. And where are the decisions made when you have this coexistence model going on? Well, we got about 3-4 minutes left here. The resources, there's a lot of links here that talk about how to configure FOPI and things like that. So this is a great resource for you to go out, download the slide deck, and make use of that. We'll come right back to questions in just a moment. Once again, there's my email address. Like I said, if you want to email me, otherwise I'll be at the booth tomorrow, noon to 3, I believe, is my time down there, or on Twitter, which I almost never post, so... I don't know why I put it in here. Related content, the Exchange Online Archiving, Bharat did that just before this session, if you didn't get a chance to see that, and the online archiving, so journaling to the cloud. If you want to see that, that's a great session for you to download and check out. Configuring hybrid Exchange the easy way was supposed to have been done. I believe this is one that was supposed to have been done earlier today as well, and the guy got sick and couldn't do it. If the session is not also being done later this week, maybe watch for the European Tech Ed. I think they're going to post that to the North American Tech Ed site later. Always these track resources. So I think the big thing here, these are some really neat links. MEC is coming. I know I have had so many questions about E15, and everybody goes, can you talk about E15? And no, I can't talk about E15. I think there's going to be a lot more information later in the year. Hint. So maybe you want to go to MEC later this year, come back down to Orlando. And remember to do your evaluations. This is so I can have a higher evaluation than Scott. That's the only reason that it matters. Winning Xboxes doesn't matter. Robert beating Scott in the evaluations matters. Okay? So does anybody have any more questions? Or, like I said, I'll be down at the booth tomorrow if you don't want to come up and ask questions now. All right, thanks for coming out. I hope everybody enjoys the rest of Tech Ed. Wrong conference.